Hey y'all, this is your host, Elise Robinson with the Nobody Wants to Work Though podcast, season 2. I hope the stories inspire you to switch careers. I have done all kinds of interesting things in my life, and I'm a firm believer if you only live once. Sit back and enjoy.
We are Switch into Tech. Tech resources to accelerate your career in information technology. Monthly classes on tech topics. We offer free or discounted exam vouchers, scholarships, free Udemy courses, free events, free boot camps, and more. You can find us at www.switchintotech.org.
Hey, y'all. This is Elise Robinson with Nobody Wants to Work Though podcast. Today, we have Michael Glasic. No, Glasic.
That's good. That's good. I love it. I love it, Elise. I tell you what.
And he's going to introduce himself so I can quit butchering his name.
I love coming on these podcasts, and I love talking to American people because it's a joy to hear how they pronounce my surname. But yeah, I am Michael Glasic. I am a career and confidence coach, and I will talk a lot more about what that involves and the practicalities. But thank you so much for having me, Elise. I appreciate it.
All right. I guess, who are you? What do you do? What is a career confidence coach?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So who am I, I suppose? So first and foremost, I'm a husband and son. That's how I see myself first and foremost. But in terms of my professional life as a career and confidence coach, and I'm sure we'll dig into why I ultimately ended up here. I didn't always do this, and I didn't kind of start in this place. There are some very kind of personal and professional reasons for why I'm here. But my sole job and like the purpose and the kind of energy I have every day when I wake up is to inspire people to do what inspires them. And that is the thing that drives me and gives me energy and motivates me. And I truly believe in a world that's so full of hate, that if we can have more people doing what inspires them, we'd live in a much more caring and compassionate world. And if I can even live a small ripple effect on that, then I've done my job, and I can go to bed when I kind of hang up my boots at the end of my life, the end of my days, a happy man.
I mean, you said a lot because, you know, before we had this conversation, I told you that I've always loved tech, but the industry is just ill, you know? They don't want people that look like me in the industry. So how, I mean, this is not even any part of questions, but how do you try to coach people and you know that they don't fit the mold? I mean, we can do an extreme example of, oh, I'm 5'4", but I want to be an NBA player or a football player, right? Or, you know, I'm not the best looking person, you know, I don't fit the mold of the typical model, or, you know, somebody that, I don't know, you know, I'm giving physical stuff, but how do you rectify that when you do your career coaching? You just know that it's, you're delusional.
So for me, and I will push back a little bit, at least I think on this, is first and foremost, who am I to say who is delusional and who's not? And am I, by saying I'm someone who's delusional, what set of rules am I basing that on? So as you quickly said that to me, because I knew exactly what I was going to answer when you started that question, I just Googled the shortest basketball NBA player. And I've got a chap that's come up as Muggsy Bogues, who's 5'3". And there's another person who's 5'3½". There's another person who's 5'4". And there's about 10 different people who are the shortest kind of basketball player. Now, I know I'm saying it a little bit in jest, but I truly think beyond that, for me, and this will be the constant underlying factor that I always kind of fall back on, because there will be hard times, you'll be silly to think there won't be. It's always, what's the why? Why are you doing this? You know, are you doing this to appease your friends? Are you doing this to appease your family? Are you doing this to appease society's aims and I suppose beliefs on what you should do with your life? If you are, maybe I would have a bit of more of that challenge. I wouldn't definitely call them delusional, but I would definitely challenge them more. But if there's a stronger why, and I can see it in the soles of their eyes when they speak to me, then who am I to dissuade them and call them disillusional or delusional? because it's happened in the past. And even if it hasn't happened in the past, who's to say they aren't the first person to do it? So for me, it's a lot around coaching. For me, is around my own self-awareness, around my limiting beliefs and my restrictions, because I can only take someone as far as I've gone. And if I have those restrictions in my beliefs and what is you can or what is and isn't possible, then how will I truly be serving someone with those restrictions and those beliefs? So for me, the answer to your question per se for me is, what is the why behind this? And if I'm happy with that why, and I've pushed someone to get to a why where you can see it soaring out of their eyes, then who am I to say they're delusional or whatnot?
That you're right, you're right. I'll agree with that, but
I hear a but. I hear a but.
here's another example.
Go
This
on.
was a couple years ago. You know, I was living in Mexico or whatever, right? And there was this Facebook group I was part of, and there was this lady. She came on there and she said that she had two kids, and one was still like under 6 months, so it was fresh, right? And she said she wanted to move to another country, and she basically said that the IRS took her tax refund, and but she, you know, she got a couple of dollars saved up or whatever. And I told her, I said, look, ma'am, when you move to another country, especially a so-called shithole country, there is no welfare, there's no support services, you know, when especially when you're not a permanent resident or a citizen, right? You can't just move somewhere all willy-nilly and expect, you know, if something doesn't work out, they're going to help you and take care of you. And I say, you have two kids, you know, you got to plan this out very carefully. So therefore, you know, you're not over there suffering. You know, because people get in their mind that it's so easy to move overseas, you know, it's cheaper, and all I got to bring is $5,000 or insert number here, and you know, I can figure it out when I get there. And she cussed me out, right? Because I'm a realist, and I've done this, you know, and I've also seen people fail at it. So, you know, I'm trying to save her the heartache and trouble and make her think. But people were silently messaging me saying, hey, you know, I didn't want to say it. You know, people are scared to say it. But you're right. So I guess my next question is, how do you deal with people that, you know, don't want to listen to common sense, I guess it is, and work around that? Do you cut them as a client? What do you do?
Absolutely. So, I mean, firstly, thank you for sharing your personal story about that person. And I think what will perfectly kind of cover this is, for me, a coach, and this is was very much instilled in me when I did my initial coaching training with the ICF, was a coach kind of does three key things, like a trifecta. So they guide, support, and challenge people to kind of ultimately reach their goals. Now, that support is that cheerleader. So you have that friend who always says you can do everything no matter what. So, even if their odds are stacked against them in that situation you gave, they just, yeah, you can do it, the yes men, perhaps. The guidance is obviously supporting someone on that journey. Perhaps you've done the move yourself. You have moved abroad. You have a bit of insight, a bit of experience that you can share with others to help guide them on their own path. But then, most importantly, I personally think is the challenge. So even how I slightly push back a little bit with yourself in terms of that delusional piece, I think it's acting from a place of integrity and challenging someone from a place of love, and not from a place of I know it all and I'm telling you what to do. But if you challenge someone and you do it from a place of love, and you've already have a sense of rapport and trust built with that person, for me, it can only lead it to a positive space. Now, I will do that from the beginning. I jump on a call with someone throughout the whole coaching kind of journey with them. And I have people, and I'm very choosy with the people I work with. Because a coaching, a relationship, I suppose, the key difference, I would say very quickly, therapy works on the past and how it affects you to your present day. Coaching effect, works on where you are in your present day to kind of achieve your current goals. And it's what we call an equal relationship. And mentoring is something where, say, you're an accounts intern, someone's a chartered accountant, a mentor tells you what to do. Take this exam, take this path, take this ACA or this CIMA in terms of to do your chartered journey. A mentor tells you what to do. Now, I'm not saying one is better than another, but I share those differences because different mentors, therapists, coaches can perform an amazing kind of results depending on the situation of the client. So for me, when I have that co initial coaching conversation with someone, I'm very clear on what I do. I'm very clear on the challenge. And then when people put their idea across of what the goal they want to do, I will challenge them. And if there is not that chemistry, one of two things, I say, look, please book a consultation call with another coach. I might not be the best person for you. But equally, I will also say maybe a therapist or a mentor is what's kind of best for you in your current situation. So I hope that kind of answers your question to a certain degree, because the challenge is incredibly important. And if you just kind of say yes, you're amazing, you can do everything, you're lying to that person. And if you're lying to someone, are you actually truly serving them? In my opinion, no.
So basically, what you're saying is I need to stop making definite statements and do questions instead.
What I suppose, yeah, with me, I will often answer with a question more than an answer. Like almost when I say more, I mean almost like 90% of the time. Because even the fact you're asking a question in a coaching conversation, obviously not in a podcast situation, why are you asking that question? Are you seeking my validation on the answer? Yes, I can make you feel good and say, yeah, that sounds great, but what happens in a week's time when you're on your own? So for me, humans, and it sounds cliche, are capable of far more than we can ever imagine. You've shared a bit of your personal journey with me, which I think is truly inspiring. And if you were to look back 5 years, do you think you truly thought you'd done all the things you've done today? You thought there's no way in hell I could have done all these things. But your resilience, your grit, whatever you want to call it, your values have held you to achieve so many magical things in the past 5 years. Who's to say what you can't accomplish in the next 5 years? And for me, how can I be the judgment or the ruler to put preconceptions on other people? What I can do is I can challenge someone, but I'm in no state to say this is possible or this isn't.
No, I agree with that. And no, I'm a bad motherfucker, so
Amen. Yes, you are, Elise. Like I said, we were sharing our stories, we're sharing our journey. You went live, and I think you lived a hell of a life, and you can teach some people.
And I agree, I can't wait until like I'm 40 so I can see what else I do. But at this point in my life, I'm like, I've done a lot. So, I mean, how can I top that? So I'm like, what else can I do to top it? Funny that you say that because I was talking to a therapist when I was going through my home buying process. It was a journey in itself. And I was boohoo and crying like all the time because I thought it wasn't going to work. But so I kind of reached out to a therapist. So because my family was getting tired of hearing me talking about it. So it's like I need an independent, person. But he was basically saying, what are you gonna do in the future? What's your next goal? And I was like, I don't really know at this point. I guess I have to figure something out because I don't really have anything at this point. I'm like, I just wanna lay around and as me and my sister say, look ugly. So that's where I'm at.
And I suppose on that piece, the word passion, goals, purpose, a lot of these terms get thrown around quite willy-nilly. And I think whenever you hear someone who shares this, always look at the context for why they're sharing it with you. Are they, prying on an insecurity to try and sell you something? Be very wary of the world you live in. But not every single person has one purpose. People have multiple purposes, and the purpose doesn't have to be as big and almighty as, solving world famine or anything like that. For me, simply trying to inspire people to do what inspires them could be applied to so many different factors. And if I can just do that on a daily basis, whether it's through my words, through a podcast, or through my actions, through the practice I kind of run, that is what kind of gives me energy at the end of the day. And, energy doesn't lie. That pit in your stomach when you do certain things, or it's Sunday afternoon and you're thinking, here we go again, it's back to work on a Monday. Energy doesn't lie. So for me, it doesn't always have to be overwhelmingly, I'm going to solve this planet or solve this world issue. For some people it has. You look at past, MLK and those who have stood on their shoulders, they've done those things. But for me, just at a small granular level, if I can serve every day and inspire people to do what inspires them, that is what gives me energy, and that's what put a smile on my face.
No, definitely. Get back to the questions because we didn't got all the way off topic, but
All good.
I love it. I
It's
love
all
it.
good.
How did you get to this point that you wanted to be, a coach? Because, no one wakes up, when they're 12 and say, "Hey, I'm gonna be a coach one day."
Yeah, no, they absolutely. I think for me, first and foremost, I would say the coaching industry is clearly booming. And there's a kind of every man, wife, and dog is calling themselves a coach, which for me personally, I think it's only a good thing because I think the more people who can have those conversations and have increased self-awareness is only going to serve a better purpose, especially in a world full of hate, as we kind of discussed earlier. For me, there was quite a personal reason for how I kind of fell into coaching. So I wasn't that 12-year-old, like you said, who woke up and said, "Mum and Dad, I'm gonna be a coach." So I'm a what you would call a second generation immigrant. So my mum was born in Jamaica, my dad was born in England, in the UK. And they my mo dad, my, sorry, my mum moved to UK and had me in the UK. Hence being a second generation immigrant. And a lot of things, this is not the sole reason, but a lot of things in my life, I was absolutely spoilt with love, didn't need or want anything. So I lived a very humble childhood, definitely not poor, definitely not rich. But there was a big drive around that financial security and stability. And funny enough, I actually went to try to aspire to be an accountant. So I took accounting and finance. But very quickly, even in my university kind of degree, swapped to business management. And it's only with hindsight I can see my love of people. But at the time, I didn't twig. Still went into financial kind of institutions, absolutely hated it. Went into a contemporary art gallery. That was where I, as an accounts intern, absolutely hated it. And then finally fell into what we call the National Health Service in the UK, at the NHS. And that's when I found my home. I was there for kind of roughly 6, 7 years in operational slash project manager roles. So creating like massive projects that affect like kind of thousands of patients' lives. And I still have that strong purpose of the NHS of like, for me, what we call free at the point of entry, so providing healthcare to those who can't afford it, and I think it's a really valuable kind of system. But slowly over time, although I love the purpose of the NHS, my role itself was getting more and more detached from why I kind of joined initially. I was in more and more meetings, speaking all these big fancy words, but not seeing the change that was actually happening. And I could see if I was to continue on that path, I could be a transformation director and earn good money and all the rest of it. But ultimately, I wouldn't be happy at the core of my soul. That combined, I would say, with my dad receiving a diagnosis for Alzheimer's, absolutely threw my life up in the air. Whether you like it or not, it makes you reflect on a lot of things in life. My dad was only, I believe, 74. He had me quite late in life, but my dad was only 74 at the time. And in the grand scheme of things, that is early. He's still got easy 15, 20 years of his life to live. So from there, I really kind of reflected on my career, my life, how, not this live life like it's last day, none of that nonsense. But it did force me to say, if I'm going to be on this planet for another 40, 50 years, by God, I want to actually do something that I enjoy and serves a wider purpose. And that's when I fell into podcasts, I fell into books. And I used to have to describe who this person is, but they're so big now, I don't have to. I listened to a particular podcast by a chap called Stephen Bartlett, so Diary of a CEO. And he interviewed a chap called Jordan Peterson. And it was all around self-confidence and self-awareness. And from that podcast, that was me. I was reading books. I found coaching, realized it's basically something I've done since the beginning of my days in terms of answering the question with a question, not telling people what to do. And did a coaching course. And then my interest and my curiosity just snowballed from there, at least. So hence why I'm here today speaking to you.
I love that podcast. I don't listen to all of them, but he put me on to Dame Dash. Because I mean,
Oh,
Dame Dash is Dame
so
Dash.
good.
I mean, he's Black culture in America, right? And that podcast really touched me because he lost his mother very early and it sent him down a spiral. But yeah, no, I love that podcast. The latest one I had watched was Busta Rhymes. And he's a big part of Black culture too. So, but yeah, if anybody ain't heard of him and watched him, he phenomenal.
Absolutely. And
I aspire to be like him when I grow up.
it's so funny because, like, when I first listened to him, not like I was his first ever listener or anything like that, but when I first listened to him, he was relatively small, and I had to, like, say, oh, there's this person in the UK, he's like mixed race, and like he's really good. Whereas now I don't have to do any of that. I just say, you know, Stephen Butler, and they go, oh, yeah, I know Stephen Butler. Because obviously, you know, his message and his story has grown and transcended, that he, you know, he's absolutely killing it, and good luck to him. So yeah, I'm not the only one. I'm sure many people have listened to his podcast and gone on to amazing journeys. But that combined with the Alzheimer's for my dad, you know, was the catalyst, I suppose, for my career change.
Gotcha. What did you want to be when you grew up?
So I love this question, at least, because I, like, this is the God's truth, right? I don't know. And I even had to message my mum, and my mum replied and said, is this a test? Because I don't know. So it's really funny. I'm this, you know, I don't remember wanting to be a sportsman. So that's often what common, you know, men, male kind of figures often want to do. I know when I got older, like teenager, I wanted to be a business person. I do remember that. Again, I think linked to that security and stability and the rest of it. But in my earliest years, I don't know really. And what I do know is I love talking to people, and that's never stopped. And I've always been curious. I've always been that annoying person that says, why? But why? But why? And it's like, oh, just, this is the answer. You don't need to know why. But yeah, I think that's my honest and fair reflection on my childhood. And I, like I said, I did my research and asked my mum, and she said, no, nothing stuck out. I think it was only when I became more like in my teenage years and had a bit more of an understanding of the world, that then I, a business person, kind of working for myself per se, that's what started to interest me, I'd say.
My nephew said since he was a, you know, like a baby, he wanted to be a police officer. And I ask him every year, I'm like, you still want to be a police officer? Yeah, he's 11 now. So yeah, I make sure I ask him. So, you know, because I want to be able to prepare him, you know, yeah, for the future, if that's what he still wants to be, and we can get him on that track. But no, he said since he was very little, he wanted to be a police officer. He used to tie me up and, you know, and beat me. So I'm like, okay.
Like, I mean, you're getting down some dangerous conversations here.
I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like, well, there's different types of police officers you can be. You can work for the feds as, like, you know, FBI agent, or, you know, criminal officer. When I worked for the IRS, there was a lady, and she was like really short and stuff, and she was a criminal agent. So she would go in there busting doors on, you know, people that did financial crimes, and she was so sweet, and I never expected her to be that. She was like, yeah, I used to do that. So I'm like, you don't have to be that type of police officer. There's other kinds. So yeah.
Absolutely.
Let's see. You talked about the catalyst and what got you interested in that. All these things come at a cost. What did it cost you along the way? Did your family think you were crazy? Did your friends support you?
So I think when on the parents question, I suppose, if someone truthfully asked me, like, who are my heroes, or who did I look up to when I was young, it's going to make me emotional, actually, but it always, and it is to this day, is my parents. Like, I've always looked up to my parents, of how strong, how resilient they've been, especially my mum, bless her, in these current days, kind of care, myself and her caring for my father. And the work ethic they had, you know, my mum, you know, isn't particularly intelligent, and she wouldn't mind me kind of saying that, but my goodness, she has the work ethic to make up for it. And, you know, there's so much, you know, it's almost easy if you're born with talent, you know, it's almost a shame to kind of waste it. But my mum, she got every drop out of what she kind of was brought to this earth by, and I couldn't have a bigger role model in my mum, to be honest. And my dad, bless him, he started as an upholsterer, so like creating furniture and stuff like that with my dad, or my granddad, sorry. He went from there as a postman, so posting stuff, to a messenger back in the days before computers, and sending, you know, letters by hand to banks, to a receptionist, and then to a senior receptionist in a bank in London. Hence his way of talking with people, and that's kind of falling down to me, and his judge of character. So for me, I had, and even to this day with my wife, you know, bless her, I've had so much support on my journey. And I think when people can see that you're doing it from a truthful, like truthfully authentic place, it's a lot easier for people to jump onto that journey and support you on your path. Of course, you know, I had to shed a previous identity. I was Mr. Corporate Project Manager, you know, delivering these amazing projects and changing people's lives and all the rest of it. And a clear shift, the clearest I would say, was on like social media profiles, like LinkedIn, because I was badged as this is who I am to like connect with others. And over time, I had to slowly unfold that project manager identity and rebuild myself as a coach. And I had people at various kind of, honestly, high senior high level positions question me at my workplace and say, you know, what's all this coaching lark? You know, what's all this coaching stuff, Mike, I'm seeing? That made me, you know, think twice about, is this the right path? Is this what I want to do? But thankfully, you know, I had my family, my wife, my partner at the time, to support me on that journey. And I think, you know, I always talk about two words, consistency and curiosity. And I'm a curious individual, and I will be to the end of my days. But consistency, you know, just eats everything for breakfast. Like if you take small, tangible actions, and I bang on about this so much with the clients I serve, say every week, you know, there's 52 weeks in a year. If you made one small action every week, just like, my goodness, that the change and the growth you can have in a year's time. And I did that. I made my one small little post on LinkedIn, and slowly I shed the identity of my previous self. And, you know, I now have a real amazing network of coaches and clients and people I can kind of fall back on now. So for me, you know, what is courage? It's feeling the fear and doing something anyway. And that is one of the biggest things that I did and got me to where I am today, I would say.
Did you get your CA?
My what, sorry?
Your chartered accountant?
So no, so I didn't. So I very quickly, thankfully, I swapped from an accounting path to a project manager path. So I have Prince 2 and more project management qualifications.
Gotcha.
Because that was going to be my corporate route.
No, I asked because I'm wondering, you know, where did your first client come from? Was it from your background in accounting, or, you know, did it help?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. So I actually coached people in the NHS. So I did like a group coaching, multiple group coaching sessions with like senior NHS leaders, all around emotional intelligence. And simply, for those who may not know what emotional intelligence is, simplest way I describe it is, what is it like to be on the receiving end of you? That's what emotional intelligence is. So especially senior NHS managers, you know, you think, my goodness, the pressure they're under in terms of healthcare, it's not known for being the most well-funded kind of operation. You're dealing with like trauma and the hardest kind of cases. How can we support our leaders to operate from a kind of a place of a kind of strong emotional intelligence? Because that trickle effect is incredibly important on operational teams, and then ultimately patient outcomes. Because if you don't look after your employees, you know, in turn, it often leads to negative effects on the patients, clients, customers, you know, whatever field you're in. So that was a big piece for me. I served as quite an emotionally intellectual leader in terms of my project manager role. And I think that's what people knew me as. I was very good at connecting with individuals, even if I hadn't, you know, it's the first time I met them, and kind of serving from a place of love and saying, how can we do something as a collective? And I think that shone through. And then as soon as I adopted that kind of coaching role, I think it was a no-brainer for a lot of people. I think some people almost saw it in me before I saw it myself. And they were like, of course, you know, do this workshop for us and, you know, help kind of our future leaders. So, yeah, that was one that kind of comes to mind that kind of came from my past life, per se, and then helped me into the coaching career.
Oops. No, I asked that because, you know, there's people that I talk to, and, you know, some of the guests that come on the show, and they're like, you know, I thought that was a waste during the time that I was doing this, and I wasn't, I guess, walking in my purpose, what I wanted to actually do. And, you know, I tell them it's because, you know, that prepared you for where you are now, whether it's a client or, yep, you know, those connections, or, you know, one thing that helped me when I was an auditor was presentations. Like, not to say that I was scared or anything like that, but it helped me to talk to people that were equal to me or higher level than me and not see them as, oh, I shouldn't say this or I shouldn't do that. Like they're people too. And to practice, and I guess, like people have alter egos. I let my alter ego take place. Like I guess right now I'm probably in my alter ego because I'm an introvert. So,
Like,
people think I'm an extrovert and I'm not. Like I'd like to sit at the house. I say that because a lot of people think the things that they do in their lives are a waste, and it's like it's really not. Whether it's resting or you did another career for a number of years, it's never really a waste. And
and just on that, I think I completely agree with you. I think for me personally, I have a faith, whatever, faith doesn't always have to be religious constraints. It can be whatever you deem it to be in terms of faith. But I do truly believe everything happens for a reason. And that faith really does serve me in a positive light. Even when my dad had his diagnosis, at the time, I wasn't operating from this place that I'm speaking now, but it allowed me to move past that. And even though I'm still processing it to this day, and I will to the end of my days, I'm allowed to kind of utilize that as a catalyst that allowed me to put me on this path to then help other people. So I think it's truly powerful to say, not to see yourself as a victim and everything you do, the transferable skills that allowed me from project management and from financial administration that I utilize now in this current day is absolutely invaluable. I completely agree. Don't see as your past time as wasted. There will always be experiences or skills that you can lift out of that will just prepare you for the future.
No, definitely. You spoke on something that's really important too, is that there's no coincidences. Like whether you believe in a higher power or not, I don't believe in coincidences. The universe gives you all the signs and symbols you need, and whether you pay attention to them or not, they're there. So, because when I do these podcasts, you'll hear people say over and over again, like, I saw it, but I wasn't really paying attention. It was always there, but I didn't really want to do it right then and there, or this and this, some type of excuse, I guess. So yeah. Let's see. You kind of talked about your process on switching careers. What type of certifications did you get? Did you have to reword your resume? How did you convince people to take a chance on you and be their coach?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So, I suppose a key thing that I did is I so even to this day I split careers, and I so it's been really, really helpful for me. So I work at a higher education, so like a university, as like a careers officer, helping people grads, postgrads pursue their careers post education. And then I have the coaching practice, and it's amazing because they both feed into each other. So one talks a lot about what I would call functional recruitment, so how to get the job, and then the coaching side talks about what job, where do I go to find it? So it's a beautiful kind of mix of the two that help each other. But to get to that space, both of those roles that I'm now in give me energy. Like they actually give me energy. They don't take energy away from me. And I think it's nothing to do with the organizations or whatever I worked at previously. It's just as I grew more comfortable in who my authentic self was and what gives me energy, you start to realize more and more what takes away from you. But a big piece for me, and something that I bang on about so much in terms of the clients, especially off the how to get a job, was that networking piece. So some of the key people I met through LinkedIn, I kind of connected with people when I did my initial research of what careers complement coaching or what careers allow you to implement coaching skills on a daily basis. That careers officer role came up at loads at higher education establishments. So I contacted people. So I always talk about trying and get your mentor to be you, but 5 years ahead. So I contacted people who were 5 years into a careers officer career. Pardon me, met over Zoom, asked about the qualifications I had, the skills I had, the experience I had previous to joining that role. And then I actually got people to read over my CV to kind of help tweak it, to talk about interview questions. The biggest thing for me that I've touched on slightly is transferable skills. So your past years aren't just wasted. You have so much experience. I mean, me, I was recruiting people from the chief executive to cleaners. So when I'm now going into a careers role, I actually have the practical experience of having people sit in front of me, interviewing them, shortlisting them through CVs to actually get them to that place. So yes, you need a level of theory and theoretical knowledge to be in more in a higher education establishment, but like I actually had practical knowledge that I was bringing to the table, which you can't replace really. So that, along with kind of an understanding of the education establishments and the more qualifications that I required or at least had needed an understanding about, that put me in a massive place. But the ceiling, the deciding factor for me, was when I got to the interview. So all of that helped me get to the interview. But when I got to the interview, and again, I was going to say this, it's always linking back to this why I was communicating not just how and what, how I'll be a good person in this role, but I was communicating why I was in that interview and why I wanted the job. And for me, and I'll repeat what I said, I don't just see you as another notch on my CV or another notch on my career. I see you as an opportunity for me to do what I think I was born to do and ultimately like do something that gives me energy. Now, you can look at my past career and you can see all the achievements I've done that I am proud of, but that was in a place when I was in jobs that were taking energy away from me. Just think what I can do when I'm in a place when I'm actually aligned to what I want to do and I'm actually getting a job that's giving me energy. And for me, the added bonus was I actually were I when I studied at this institution, and then I went full circle to actually work at this institution. I said, if you're not just getting someone who's gonna be doing the job that's giving them energy and going from this level where I've done X, Y, Z, but you're having someone who's not, when they're talking to students, they're talking to people, I've been in their footsteps. I've gone in the real world. I have 8 odd years experience behind me of practical work experience, and I'm now sitting in front of them and telling them what they can do. If that's not going to inspire the next generation, I'm not sure what is. It's hard if you've got a 50-year-old, old white person sitting in front of you. How can you relate to that person? Especially from you and me in terms of our background and our ethnicities. Whereas if I look at someone who's 5, 10 years older than me, that looks like me, that speaks like me, I'm much more likely to listen to them, and then they're much more likely to give a shot and give me a go.
No, definitely. People are steadily telling me. I mean, you told me that, I need to put myself out there more, and I have over the years. Maybe society wasn't ready for me at the time, because everything has to literally line up, right? But like you're saying, someone that looks like you, because what if someone wants to go study overseas? Or one thing that I did was I went to Guatemala outside of Mexico to learn Spanish, because Guatemala is much, much cheaper than Mexico for whatever reason. But I guess when you think of Spanish, you think of Mexico, right? So I went to Guatemala for 3 months and got my Spanish all the way tight or tight enough. And I did a homestay with a family. And I was terrified because I was like, I don't want to stay with a family. I pretty much lived by myself or a boo thing, since I left the nest. And so going to stay with some strange family, and there's other people that I don't know about too, staying in this house, that's terrifying. But then there was, like you're saying, someone that looked like me. And she was like, yeah, no, you should do it. Like, it was amazing. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go do it. You know what I'm saying? So, and I loved it. I loved it. I loved the 3 months that I was there. So, I gotta go back because I gotta go see my teacher. Yeah, no, I mean, you're so right about, being somewhere and seeing someone that looks like you and have the same experiences. I mean, it makes everything okay. So yeah, I'm gonna try to put myself out there more than what I already do, but I'm an introvert, so
Yeah, and I'm always mindful of these titles and these boxes, because so I would also associate with that introvert label. I've spent this whole weekend because I was very self-aware that I've been incredibly busy and I needed some time for myself. So I spent this whole weekend just crafting and doing like listening to podcasts on my own and just crafting like literally all day Saturday and all day today, apart from meeting yourself, just to recharge my batteries, ready for another few weeks, another stint. But what I that being said, I'm mindful of the label of calling myself an introvert, and I actually don't do it that much now because we often our mind is incredibly clever, but whatever we say, our mind manifests it, and it tries to act our behaviors, our actions try to align it to what we say. So by keep saying we're an introvert, you're almost limiting your potential and what you can do. So again, I would challenge you, I suppose, at least not to say that's your fundamentals and how you work, because I completely associate with that, hence having the whole weekend to myself. But I'm mindful now of the language, like ADHD, autism, like all these terminologies, all these boxes we put. I'm very mindful now, because what we tell ourselves often becomes true. And I think there's a quote from Mr. Ford, who created Ford, and I think his quote is along the lines, apologies if I butcher it, but it's those who believe they can't and those who believe they can are both correct. So if you believe you can't, you probably won't be. But if you believe you can, you will probably make it true. And I think I've seen that in my past, and I'm sure you've seen it in yours too.
I don't know. I believe in labels. I'm all about labels because I need to know what I'm dealing with.
And I for me, again, it's not, this is not a coaching conversation, and you know, I don't want to coach unsolicited, because it's a vulnerable space to be in. But I would argue labels give us security, and labels give us safety, and labels let us know the boundaries that we're operating in. But you don't strike me like someone that likes to operate within boundaries. You know what you want, and from what you told me earlier, you know what you've always wanted to do, and you've done it. So why let someone's boundary, most importantly yourself, get in the way of that?
Boundaries for everyone else, not for me. I'm gonna do what I want to do. But I mean, I
Amen.
like labels, like, because like you're saying, you operate within these boundaries, you know what to do, what not to do, and things like that. So I totally agree with that. And you gotta remember that I studied accounting, so everything has boundaries, right?
Yeah.
There's rules and regulations to everything. So you know, I operate in that a lot, but like you said, rules for thee, not for me.
Yeah, and again, this will be my final comment, and I will sip on this comment. Is that sounds like the story you're telling yourself, and you're extrapolating a professional. These are my boundaries. You know, I did accounting, so of course I'm going to be like this. Like that's the story you're telling yourself, so of course it will manifest and be that way. So yeah, I you're right. There's rules and regulations. There's laws. Don't get me wrong. There's nuance to everything, but I would always push back a little bit and be mindful of, just because I'm an accountant doesn't mean you have to think a certain way per se. But that's just me.
No, I agree with you, and that's the gray area that you're talking about. But you know, everything is pretty much black and white, so there's that. That's just that one couple times is gray. But I forgot what I was gonna say. But yeah, no, I don't have like limitations. Everything needs limitations, you know. But there, like again, there's gray areas. There's time where you there shouldn't be limitations, you know. But no, it's not something that I'm telling myself. It's true to an extent, and I always that's that gray area, you know.
Your laugh says it all, Elise. I promise I'm zipping, so your laugh says it all.
It's true to an extent, that gray area. But no, I mean, I guess my thing with the introvert thing is like I'm not gonna reach out to you. You're gonna have to reach out to me, because otherwise I ain't gonna be able to do it. That's the whole thing.
I mean, do you mind if I ask you a question, Elise? I think for when you have those presentations, and you said previous experience that helped you with speaking to people, you know, whether regardless of what senior position they're in, you know, when you first did that, I would, you know, guess that you were very confident, and that was a bit nervous and a bit, you know, made you a bit kind of scared about the situation. And you might still be nervous now, but I'm sure you're a lot more confident when approaching presentations and approaching those conversations. And it simply happened because of a consistency of practice and taking small actions. Now, what you've just said, yes, that might be your default, and I'm not disagreeing with that, but who's to say you can't shift that default with small steps and small actions? Pardon me, and adopting a kind of a goal around consistency. So it's not to say, every time I have a podcast, every time I'm invited to do something, I'm like, oh God, here we go, and my shoulders go up and I get a bit nervous. But because I've done it so many times, it's just 1% easier. Whereas if I was to do this 5 years ago, there's no way in hell you get me up on a mic and speaking about my life and sharing it with others. So like I said, like with all things in life, there's nuance. But I think just because that's your default, it doesn't mean you can't change that and take small kind of actionable steps to go to a place where, in your words, you're more extrovert, or in your words, more confident,
No, definitely. I guess, like you're saying, when I first started as an auditor, I guess it was more so scary because I worked for the military and I was in military. So, my boss is all in my head saying, you're going to be talking to officers, these people fly planes and, they run squadrons of, 300 plus people. They're super important, and who am I, this little black, skinny, tall, bald headed woman, it's like, I'm like 24, coming there trying to tell an officer what to do, I guess the thing is that other people put these ideas in your head, and that limits you a lot of times. And then when I got there, I'm like, these people ain't nobody. Like, I don't give a dang if you an officer. You fly planes and stuff, because the airplane officers, they're the worst. Let me stop stereotyping. But yeah, when someone gets in your head is really what the problem is. So you got to tune all that out. And that comes with age of tuning everything out. When you're young and dumb, everything scares you.
Yeah, and I do agree. I think as we build that self-reflective practice, and you have whatever word you want to call it, that self-awareness, that self-confidence, it often happens with time. It can, but it can often happen with big life experiences, I suppose, with myself, that you grow so confident in who you are and how you act and why you act the way you do. And for me, that links to a lot of values. And I talk about values as like the filter for the decisions you make, rather than just some poxy pieces of words that you have on a piece of paper and then you chuck away. Those are like the core elements of your soul, and they act as like the funnel for the decisions you make to actually serve a purpose. And I think the more you have an alignment with those values, then when these little decisions or these little people get in your ear, you're less likely to be swayed off that path. So I think that's, it's a testament to your journey as well in terms of where you were and where you are now. But at the end of the day, everyone's human. And most importantly, everybody is suffering with something that we're not aware of. Might be small, might be big, but every single person in this world has a challenge or is suffering something that we're not aware of. And I think the more and more you can act from a place of empathy and love, knowing that, not saying it's easy, people still cut you up and annoy you and all the rest of it, but the more and more you can align to that place, life becomes a whole lot easier.
No, definitely. What are some positives and negatives of your new career?
I think the positives are quite obvious. I think, it truly gives me more energy, and I think it can be addictive, so I have to be wary of this. But seeing the light bulb moment in someone's eyes is absolutely magical. So when you ask that question, it doesn't have to be a complex question. It's often the most simplest questions. When you ask it and you see someone, they're like looking and thinking, oh. They're thinking, oh, like that story that I've told myself, you completely debunked it. And it's like, now what am I going to do? The whole world is open to them because they're putting, like, limiting themselves in that box. I think providing those light bulb moments for people and allowing them to move past their previous challenges just fills my soul up so much. Like it's the most important thing that I do, and what gives me so much energy to continue on this path. So that for me, you know, fulfillment, whatever word you want to align to it, that is what gives me so much joy and is the biggest positive I could take away from it. The negative per se, and I, as a coach, suffer with the word or struggle with the word failure or negative, because I just, and it's it, you might think it's cringe or cliche or those are listening, but I've trained my brain so much to see things as like opportunities to learn that I struggle to kind of even interpret the word failure. But for me, knowing what I know now, you know, it's a hell of a ride. There are, you know, I know 5% of the things I knew kind of a couple of years ago, and I still know only kind of 10% of what I need to know in terms of running a practice, serving people, the different tools and techniques I can utilize, how I can help someone in like 3 sessions rather than, you know, 6 sessions. Like I'm constantly on this journey. But lining back to that value, it's like a strong value for me is lifelong learning. Like, and that's whether this it's whether sport, like I love playing golf because I literally can't be perfect. Like every day I play golf, I improve or I learn something new. So even the negative of being like naive to the journey I've had to overcome to just get to here, and I'm not even 5% along the way. For me, it just excites me because, I mean, for me, you could argue what is life, and I think for me, it's just to learn, evolve, and experience the joys that kind of life brings to us. And for me, like, what a journey I'm on, running a practice, helping people. There's so much inner work I have to do and learn to then serve other people. Is it a negative or is it actually the best blessing I could ever receive, you know?
No, it's funny to me that you mentioned, the failing and then learning, as a negative. Because I'm one of those people, like, if I fail, it's like, okay, well, you just, the cliche, the song, dust yourself off and try again, I'm not dead. I didn't hurt anyone. I didn't hurt myself. So, might have wasted a little bit of money, maybe a lot of money, but I'm still here.
Absolutely. And maybe that waste was actually, again, maybe that waste was an investment. Maybe you, by doing that, you're investing in a mistake to like to make you learn something. So the rest of your life you act a different way. So yeah, like I said, some people roll their eyes, and I've been there. Don't get me wrong. 5 years ago, I'd be rolling my eyes at a lot of things, but it's a journey we all go on. But the more and more you embrace that, like lifelong learning, I suppose. It alleviates a lot of stress in life because you think, you know, I either do what I want or I learn. There is no, so I win either way. Of course, it doesn't mean you act from a place of ego or a place of like, I don't have to try, but it definitely alleviates a lot of stress and then alleviates a lot of the concern of changing careers and that confidence piece, you know, as well.
No, I find that people are scared of people that can dust themselves off and try again. Because, I hear it all the time, like, oh, I really couldn't have done that. Like, you just keep going. And it's like, what other option do I have? I don't want to be homeless and starving. Like, you know what I'm saying? So what you telling me is that you gonna be homeless and starving? That's what you're telling me. So, I run into that a lot of where people don't know how to deal with a person that just, let the punches roll off of them or whatever like that. I don't know what question I'm trying to ask is that, as someone that walks that walk, do you find that too?
Yeah, as in, so I'm definitely not scared of, I suppose, afraid or scared of people who roll with the punches per se. But what I suppose I learned from my experiences. I think for me, I think it with that person who might be afraid and thinking, you know, there's no way I can get to a place where Michael is or whatever it is. You know, I'm not perfect, and I never will be perfect in my entire life. Perfect does not exist, and if you. You know, when you look at people who are deemed as a success, whether it's in society, business, whatever realm it is, you know, I always say, you know, show me a man's success, then show me his learnings. Because if a man is successful, I want to see his learnings that have been before him. You look at all of these, a lot of these business owners, you know, these are third, fourth time lucky people. A lot, don't get me wrong, of course, there are people who are kind of success and it booms, you know, unicorn businesses on their first try. But a lot of these people have learned their mistakes from like multiple businesses. And then they kind of craft that knowledge and craft those learnings and then launch their fourth or fifth business. And then it kicks off and then it explodes. So for me, when someone says, look at this person's success, like for me, I study their learnings. And it's exactly the same with me. Please don't, you know, I'm not saying you would be, but don't be afraid of the manner I speak or the place I operate from. And you feel that you can't get to that place, you know, be very aware of the learnings and what you may call the failures that I've been through. Because that is only what's allowed me to kind of operate and come to this place I am now. And my goodness, there's going to be a lot more learnings and there's going to be a lot more failures on this journey that I'm on. And I can't wait for them because they are just a journey. They are a present and they are an investment into my future. And without them, I'd still operate in my little box that I was, you know, a few years ago.
Definitely. I think people miss the growing opportunities that come along with failure and dusting yourself off again. And yeah, that's one reason why I listen to the diary of a CEO is because people talk about their failures and, you know, you can learn from them. And I don't understand why a lot of people are scared to talk about their failure. That's number one. And number two, you know, try to act like, you know, they didn't have any failures and it just hit all of a sudden. And funny, before I started this podcast, me and my friend were going to start a podcast about like entrepreneurship journeys and talk to people about their entrepreneurship journeys. Because I don't think there's anything out there like that, you know? And there's books, I've read books about it, you know, but that's about one single person usually. But that didn't jump off. So, you know, if someone ever starts a podcast about, you know, the entrepreneurship journey and the failures, you know, I've watched interviews about people that got off of drugs and their journeys and people that went to prison and their journeys. Cause yeah, I mean, I enjoy stuff like that because it's constant learning, and you should want to watch things like that so you know what to do, what not to do, as my mother used to say, reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, and at its deepest core, it's real. That's what it is. That's what I suppose I love, and that's why I'm attracted to it. You know, with that journey or that podcast, what, you know, that you've imagined, nothing. It's the reality of people's lives. And again, in a world where there's lots of, you know, false stories, and people build themselves to be something, false personas, build themselves to be something that they're clearly not. You know, to share a bit of reality, to share vulnerability. You know, at the end of the day, we are humans, and that is probably one of the biggest way we connect with others, through a sense of vulnerability, and a sense of reality and practicality. So, yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more.
All right, what are some traits that you believe that someone would be good as a coach? I ain't gonna be no coach because I'm. Well, somebody told me that I could be a coach because I'm like a direct coach, and but they said some people would pay for it. Like, so I'm gonna be the abusive coach.
I'm not gonna lie, I've never heard of that tagline, the abusive coach. I'm not sure that will stick, but yeah, I mean, everyone in this world can be a coach in their own right. I think. It's one thing to enter an industry. It's another thing to master it. For those who are worried about transitioning careers, and again, there's nuance, there's balance, I understand. But it is incredibly easy to transition and enter careers. It's more the self-talk, the identity, the confidence piece around it that kind of stops us from doing so. But to master a career, and when I say master a career, I mean master a career in your own right, in your own eyes, not master a career. You know, a master career means I have to be a £1 billion business or anything like that. That for me is another level. And my naivety was a great factor and a great trait to being into the place I am today. I was thinking about this. I was thinking, if I knew all the work I had to do, would I have still taken this path? And I absolutely would have. And it makes me like almost laugh because I think, if most people were honest with themselves, they'll say, absolutely not, you know, like this, all this hassle, all this effort. But for me, the amount of learning I've gained on this journey has just been invaluable. And for me as a coach, I would say, like, having such a strong alignment to my values has allowed me to be so clear on my why. And that has been the single biggest factor for why I've got into coaching. So, very quickly, my values are fulfillment, freedom, integrity, and lifelong learning. So, fulfillment, very easy. We, you know, to serve people, to inspire people to do what inspires them. For me, there's not many more fulfilling things that I could do in my life. Freedom, I could coach. I'm speaking to you in Ohio from UK. I can coach from anywhere in the world. And if I do it well and I'm committed to my craft, it will invest me or give me a level of financial security, which is incredibly important for me, my family, my children, to give them what I think is most important. And that's experiences in life, not materialistic possessions, but experiences in life. Integrity. There's a lot of people. I think that I love the fact that the coaching industry is growing and booming because I think so many people could benefit from these conversations. But for me, to operate from a place of integrity when you're putting someone in a vulnerable state and they're sharing their opinions, they're sharing their past, their kind of trauma to a certain degree, to not serve from a place of integrity is truthfully, you know, unlawful and unmoral. So integrity is incredibly important for me. And finally, that lifelong learning. Like, I will never be a perfect coach, and that excites me. Like, I could be 80 coaching one day a week, and that is my goal. And I will still learn things from the clients I serve. Now, for me, once I talked about values being a filter for the decisions I make, because I have such a strong conviction on those values, and I've had to go through coaching, I still have a coach myself. So my actions speak louder than my words. I still have a coach to this day. Because I have such a strong conviction on my values, that's been the biggest trait for me to understand my why and why am I doing this? Why am I actually doing coaching? So when I go through those challenges, I can then overcome them. And I'm not like, you know what? I can't be bothered. It's too much. So for me, that alongside a constant mantra of curiosity and consistency, I will always be curious. You know, what may change in 5 years? I don't know now, but I will know in 5 years because I'll always be curious. And that constant level of consistency, taking small actions every week, every day, every month, will ultimately align me and put me in that positive direction. So if I can do that, and if you can do that, whatever field you want to do and have that alignment and strong conviction in your values and your why, there is nothing that will not stop you.
No, I totally agree. You mentioned integrity. And I'm thinking, you know, does that mean not going to tell someone's business? Because yeah, my sister's in healthcare, and so she'll message me, you know, we'll be at 1 o'clock in the morning. She's like, oh my God, like somebody came in here and they're doing this, and this. And I'm just like, you know, I'm enjoying all of it. But you know, she's not naming names or anything like that. Yeah, you can't, if you had like a famous client or you know, somebody like that, you can't go tell their business.
Absolutely. I think, and integrity, like, so the words I use are important for me, but I think that's it's choosing the right word, semantics, like semantically choosing the right word for you that means something to you. Could be honesty, could be transparency, whatever it is. Just integrity is a word that kind of so important to me. And like, I have a close circle of friends, close, you know, your friends are the family you choose. And, you know, integrity is one of the biggest factors in that. Seeing someone, you know, like the actions they take, like you said, the clients I serve, not sharing people's kind of stories, just serving from a place that's kind of morally founded in myself. And that's why, me personally, I find unjust situations incredibly triggering. And that's again another little way that you can find your own value. If you have that incredibly strong sense, that pit in your stomach when something happens, that is often pointing to a core value. And that, when I first encountered that supposed value and integrity, that's exactly what happened. A lot of things happened in front of me that I didn't feel very comfortable with. And even if it put me in a negative situation, I would speak out about them. And that's when I had a kind of strong indication of what that value was. And then through coaching, I could then come to the place now where I can actually articulate and verbalize it. But if you have that strong sense of that strong gut reaction to something, I would argue 9 times out of 10, that's pointing towards a kind of a core value for you. And that's not to say values can't change. They often don't change month to month, not even year to year, but they are things that will change over time and most definitely will change after big life circumstances as well.
I need to give me some core values. I'm gonna have to think about that. Mine is yellow.
Yellow. What does yellow mean for you?
You only live once. That's my
Oh,
coordinate.
YOLO. I thought you said yellow.
No,
Yeah, that's
YOLO,
fair.
and nothing is promised, but that comes back from 30, and my mother passing away at a young age. So, that's stuck with me for a number of years at this point, because I'm like, I'm gonna do it.
Absolutely.
Can't be scared out here. I'm gonna do it. I guess this is the last question, because we already kind of talked about tips and tricks of getting into the career. What would you tell someone who wants to career switch just in general?
Career switch in general. So for me, it's two things. It might be even three things. The first one is you are capable of more than you can ever imagine. You know, if you truly think back to 5 years ago in your life and where you were and what you've accomplished in that time, I guarantee you that person 5 years ago wouldn't have thought that was even possible. Now, if that person 5 years ago, you know, didn't think where you are standing in this current day, at this current minute, as you listen to myself and Elise, didn't think that was possible, who's to say what you can do in, you know, who's to say what you can't do in the next 5 years in your career, in your life? So for me, having perspective and stepping out of that current state and looking back to the past and maybe even looking onto the future, that's incredibly important. I think that general sense of that why question is incredibly important, especially for the hard times, because you know you would be silly to think there's not going to be hard times on your journey. And the stronger that why is, you know, for me, yes, it's inspired people to do what inspires them. But I think even future wise, there's a really good exercise I sometimes do with clients called the gravestone exercise. It's quite morbid, but it really kind of centers you, and it's what would you want to be written on your gravestone? And mine is always something on the lines. Of course, it will change month to month a little bit, but it's always something along the lines of a caring and a loving husband, father, and son that sought to help inspire people to do what inspires them. So there's always that central factor around family and being that caring husband, father, and son, but always serving a wider purpose of trying to inspire people and change people's paths and serve a purpose that is bigger and wider than me. And that why is so strong in my heart when I think about when eventually I have children and the current family I have and the family I will, you know, it's been so strong in my soul that when I do have tough times, and don't get me wrong, I have days, maybe even weeks when I'm low, but ultimately that why will always pick me up because that is so much stronger than doing something just for me. It's so much stronger in terms of my journey. So the biggest thing for me is understanding, whether it's through coaching, whether it's through friends, whatever it may be, but understanding that kind of why, that purpose, whatever word you want to give to it, I don't care. And I suppose understanding that if you've done all of this in your past 5 years in your life and you didn't think you could 5 years ago, who's to say what you can't do in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years going forward? So that would be my message to your listeners, Elise.
Yeah, that's really deep. That's deep. I think people need to dig down and to the core of their being, and reflect on what they did in the past, and put that same energy into the next 5 years. I don't know if I'm gonna do that, but other people should.
What was it? Do as I say, not as I do. When you got children, but yeah. But it's been. Thank you so much for having me, Elise, though. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for sharing your story as well, and vulnerable. Because as I said, I think it's truly powerful, and I think it's inspirational. And I think the more people that can have that catalyst in their lives, as I said to you earlier, the more caring and compassionate the world can be, because it's like a ripple effect. All of these conversations, all of these experiences we have, they kind of ripple onto our family, our friends, our colleagues, our co-workers. So, yeah, I'm very much a realist, but I'm also positive for where the world can eventually kind of go and become.
Tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, it quite simply, if you type Michael Glassock Coaching, so Michael Glassock Coaching, so Michael Glassock Coaching, you can find me on my website. You can find me on LinkedIn at simply Michael Glassock. And you can find me, Michael Classic Coaching, on Instagram as well. Those would be the three best places, my LinkedIn, my Instagram, and my website. And it'd be a pleasure to kind of, you can look at my posts and hopefully, you know, use my free stuff. Don't run in, you know, and I'm selling you this and I need to buy this. Use my free stuff and use other people's free stuff to make those small steps on your journey. And then one, if it works and it actually gets you to a place where you have some more money to invest in something and invest in yourself, and you then have confidence in, okay, this person's the right person for me, then crack on and go ahead, and it'll be a pleasure to help you on your journey. But yeah, for me, it's not a case of buy my shit, as I say. There's a lot of buy my shit in this world currently. Use people's free stuff, look at the context, look at their bias, and if it serves you and you think like that person's a good fit for you, then, you know, go on that journey.
All right, Michael. Thank you all for listening or watching. My name is Elise Robinson with the Nobody Wants to Work Though podcast. And until next time, we out.